Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. Steve, how are we doing this week?
Pretty good, Jim. Pretty good, all things considered. A lot of people in D.C. have some varying opinions right now, but all's good over here. So,
well, not a political show, fortunately. And probably, although, well, I will say, fortunately, you and I are pretty much in line with our political leaning. So we'd all be agreeing with each other quite a bit if we went down that path. So let's move on. In fact, not just moving on, Steve, all right? And I'm blindsiding you for this show. So let the listeners know, total lack of preparation for our show today, okay? We're winging it. And here's where I'm going to hit Steve with. Next year, a lot of folks are talking about this Penn State team. Literally, some folks have them as the preseason number one team, okay? Mm-hmm. The consensus seems to be it's a top five team. What I'm going to blindside Steve with is I want to go through this 2025 team position by position. And because I didn't give him a chance to sit down for a few days and study it, we're going to kind of hit him up position by position and see what he thinks and where they need some work to do, which, of course, the transfer portal allows you to do some of those offseason things. But before we get into the positions, let me just ask you first. As I said, multiple places, Joel Klatt, and I've seen a couple others that had him number one. A couple other places, I've been looking at ESPN's recent top 25 in 2025, and they have Penn State ranked third. Just wanted to get your feel, your take on that. Legitimate top five team, legitimate number one contender. What do you think?
Well, I think at this point of the year, all teams have questions to answer. Penn State may have fewer questions, which is why I think there's probably a legitimate case to have them towards the top half. And if you look at, you know, the last couple seasons in particular, I think, you know, we talked before about Penn State pursuing the Michigan model in NIL and sort of incentivizing people that have been proven producers on the field. I would sort of go back to Michigan, too, is Michigan's championship run had a lot of people coming back because of NIL. And I think Ohio State had a fair amount of this year. Ohio State also addressed some of their needs in the portal. So I sort of understand where people are looking at a very talented Penn State roster. Obviously lost a couple big names with Abdul Carter and Tyler Warren. But, you know, a bulk of the team is coming back and was a very good team. I think particularly the offensive line. We'll talk about them a little later. So I think it's warranted. What I don't know is how the team is going to handle these high expectations. I think, again, last time I could sort of think about this under the Franklin era would have been 2017. One of my biggest criticisms from a coaching standpoint goes back to that 2017 loss at Ohio State, what that would have meant for the program, the two back-to-back wins at Ohio State. And not only that, but following up with that real big mulligan against Michigan State the following week, just a really missed opportunity. So I think that's sort of what jumps out at me is what I put them one. I'm not sure. You know, again, there's a lot to happen with the portal injuries and everything else. But, you know, I think there is a case to be made that, you know, they finished in the top five. I probably would have made them top four. I'd put them ahead against Texas. I think it's justified to have them behind the three teams they lost to. I probably would put Oregon at number two ahead of Notre Dame. But everybody knows my thoughts on Notre Dame, so maybe that's not surprising.
The Steve Pavlik bias penalty for Notre Dame.
Wait a minute. To be fair to that, okay, look at Oregon's record. They had one loss to Ohio State in the playoffs after having beat them the first time. I mean, if you just look at the record objectively, I think that's pretty impressive. You know, Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois at home, in case people forgot. I didn't. And, you know, I think that championship game, I don't want to litigate that too much, but look, Ohio State was blowing them away. I think it's why the ratings dipped pretty significantly when that was apparent to everybody. And I think at that point, Ryan Day was smart enough to just sort of play it safe and run out the clock, which has allowed Notre Dame to come back a little bit and make it less embarrassing at the end.
Well, I give Notre Dame credit for that comeback, and I'm with you. If anything, I have as strong a Notre Dame bias as you do, but giving the devil their due, and I have to give the devil their due for both teams. I mean, Monday night was difficult for me to watch that game Fortunately, I had a few dollars on Ohio State, so that created my rooting interest. And even more fortunately, they kicked that last field goal so they could cover the 8.5-point spread. See what that is, Steve, is that is Jim prioritizing what's important, okay? And what's important is Jim himself and his his obsession with placing a few dollars on these games. But with that said, let me give you – I want to give you the top six from ESPN's perspective. And I think this is similar to what you're going to see from a lot of different folks. Round up the usual suspects at the top. Ohio State, number one, they had. Texas, number two. Penn State, three. Notre Dame, four. Georgia, five. And Oregon, six. Now, this could come very close to the top six teams from this past season. If you look, Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame, the top four in their 25 rankings are the same as, you know, the 24 Final Four. And then the next two teams being Georgia and Oregon were the Big Ten champ and the Southeast Conference champ. I think those are the names that pretty much anybody would be throwing out there, right?
Maybe. Or you could just see another example of ESPN sort of lazy SEC homer bias. Depends on what you're perspective is, I guess. You know, look, in this era of NIL and the transfer portal, I just think it's very early. And obviously teams with financial resources to go out and try to address those needs. I mean, Ohio State's going to lose a ton of people to the draft, but they spend a lot of money. And I'm sure they're going to have a lot of enthusiasm after this championship run to go out and plug some holes, which is why I'm sort of skeptical to say, you know, where should we really put them next year? I think Penn State's more of a known commodity. And again, I think there's a lot of value to, if I had to pick one position where I would really want to have a significant advantage would be that offensive line. And I don't think that you can go out and necessarily get a cohesive unit like that through the portal. So I do think that's something that's going to separate Penn State from some others. But in general, I think those are probably teams that are likely to be at the top. You can sort of quibble with the order.
Where I think some of these teams have to deal with, though, is the change in quarterbacks. Five of the six top-rated teams need a new quarterback, a new starting quarterback. Some places it's obvious. Texas is going to replace Quinn Ewers with Arch Manning. You know, a pretty good changeover. But you still have to make those changes. And although it's not complete yet, the portal, I'm not sure there's going to be the guys available like Oregon getting Dylan Gabriel, Ohio State getting Will Howard, Notre Dame getting Riley Leonard. You know, they were able to plug those holes with very experienced players. I'm not sure that will be the case this time around. All right. As promised, Steve, we're going to go position by position, get your thoughts everywhere with what Penn State has returning. I mentioned just now, Penn State, out of that top six teams, Penn State's the only team returning their starter, which is Drew Aller. And I think Ethan Grunkmeyer, we could agree, will probably be the backup. Your thoughts, Drew Aller returning. Is he a Heisman candidate, or should we have some concerns there based on his big game performances?
We don't know. I think that's something we've talked about before is just Aller's inconsistent play. I mean, when he's at the top of his game, he's sort of like draft dreamy Drew. Like, you understand why these NFL scouts are salivating. Just a lot of quarterbacks that can't make the type of the throws they do. And when he's bad, he's awful Aller. And it is just very difficult, as we saw in the Notre Dame game, where he's actually costing you games. So that range of consistency really concerns me. And that's why it's difficult for me to say, you know, is it really an asset or a liability? And you talk about, you know, ordinarily a returning starter would be more of a known quantity. I'm not sure that it is a known quantity here, which is why I'm sort of hedging a little bit. And then with Grunkmeyer as the backup, you know, I haven't really seen him make meaningful plays in snaps. I know he got in a little bit for SMU. I do think there was something to having Prabula come in and sort of spell Aller at times, complement that running attack, which I think should be even more of an asset next year, given both running backs are returning and the offensive line. So I'm curious if they're going to try to get Grunkmeyer in comparable to what they did with Prabula, to actually use him situationally, but also to have him prepared. Look, it's a long season. it was a championship team. So that 17 games, I think they played. I mean, the odds that you're going to be able to survive that from an injury perspective, you know, they are what they are. So, you know, I think not having a prepared backup in Grunkmeyer, you know, I think he'll make steps towards a lot of progress here in this offseason because he can take a lot more reps now that Prabula's gone. Whether he can sort of exceed Prabula's on-field performance remains to be seen. Although I think he's more of a sort of somebody calling in the middle between Prabula and Aller in terms of his talent, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think you'd probably consider him more athletic than Drew Aller, but not quite a Bo Prabula type. But I think what's important with Bo Prabula, it wasn't just he was the change-up, the change of pace, bringing in a quarterback who could run like he did, but it also created a situation where he got on the field and had experience. So when they really needed him, halftime in Wisconsin for the second half, he was ready to play. We have experienced in the past a situation where a backup quarterback was not ready to play when there was an injury. We all remember the game at Iowa. So I think what's interesting is the first Penn State's out of conference schedule. I don't know if you took a look at that yet or not, Steve. It's god awful. It's just terrible. Nevada, Nevada, Florida International, FIU, and Villanova. If there was ever a set of non-conference games where you should be available to put out a backup quarterback, that would be it.
Should. Thought that way about Bowling Green there too. So, you know, sometimes the games don't always go according to expectations, but I agree that should be a priority, trying to get Grunkmeyer reps. I don't know. I'm sort of wondering whether they can try to get somebody through the portal, not necessarily to replace Grunkmeyer, but could you get some of this, some guy with a lot of experience at maybe a lower level Ivy League or something like that, that could be sort of a serviceable backup in the event that you need to rely on a number three, potentially somebody that just could sort of come in, be a game manager and not blow it. You know, I'm not sure. I just don't know what that depth room looks like now without Prabula there.
That's a good point. And, you know, maybe just bring in a guy who's got reps behind him. He's been a starter somewhere, like you brought up an Ivy League guy or somebody of that ilk who's been on the field and would not be intimidated by the spotlight. We'll yet to see if that's going to be the case or not. All right, Steve, though, that is it for quarter number one. We got through one position. We've got a few more to go. We'll do that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number two of our show. I am blindsiding Steve with a positional depth chart analysis from him. But before we get there, between segments, we were chatting about, again, this championship game between Notre Dame and Ohio State. And it's like, you know, which devil do you want to root for as a Penn State fan? And, you know, I'm with you. It's tough to go either way. But you brought up the point of, well, when in doubt, you root for your Big Ten brother. I've always had an issue with that. I found it difficult because I found my dislike for Michigan and Ohio State. Combine that with I'm not crazy about the Big Ten group as a group. But this was the first year I actually felt that. And I think it has more to do with the way the Southeast Conference and ESPN and the media was treating the SEC as the far superior conference. But yes, I did have a bit of a rooting interest for Ohio State because of that, beyond my bet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just watching this whole SEC superiority narrative just collapse to the point where even fools like Feinbaum can't justify it anymore. I mean, I take great pleasure in that. I'm sure a lot of other people do too.
Yes, I think so also. All right, let's move on. We talked about the quarterbacks, Drew Aller returning. Let's hit the – I think you got to be happy with where the running back room is. Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, both coming back. First of all, how surprised were you that they were both coming back? And at what point in the season or the playoffs did it dawn on you that, gee, you know what? It's possible that at least one of them was going to come back.
I wasn't as surprised that Allen came back. I was sort of, you know, questioning, look, just the value of the position in the NFL has really deteriorated. So that gets into the compensation. We just talked about the value of guaranteed money, which means a lot if you're not going to be your first couple round pick, which obviously I didn't think, you know, Allen was going to be. Singleton, I thought he had potential maybe to get there, but, you know, at the end of the year, he really came on strong in the playoffs. I think he was battling with some injuries. So that was sort of in the back of my mind there. I thought if one of them was going to leave, it'd probably be more likely to be Singleton. And look, I also thought when Allen picked up more of the slack, because Singleton was, I think, injured in the year, you know, he didn't necessarily have the dominating performance in the middle of the year. Now, the thing I will say to both their credit is they both seem to get stronger as the season went on, particularly in the playoffs. And so that's why I'm really encouraged the fact that we have both. I think this idea that they can sort of, you know, spell each other, limit the wear and tear, you can make guaranteed money. Let's not, you know, just rule that out. And it's also different styles, I think, is really important. I don't know what that's going to mean for the rest of the room in terms of the depth chart. You know, are some of these guys that were sort of anticipating that they would get some more reps, are they going to look elsewhere now in the spring? You know, I don't know. I don't know. So what that means filters down for the recruiting standpoint. So in terms of both guys coming back, I'm at a loss to try to think of a better combination in terms of a backfield next year. It's just going to depend a lot on their health. And it's a lot easier to be healthy when you got an offensive line where you're not getting touched. So I feel good.
Yeah, you have to. And I think the way they're able to split reps, you brought up the issue, and this is always the downside of guys coming back, which is, what about, you know, your Cam Wallace's, Quentin Martin, you know, those guys, number 3 through 5 in the pecking order. And I don't want to say as a fan who cares, because you do, but I think with all these guys returning, boy, this is so much about the 2025 season and the opportunity that, you know what, I'll worry about 26 come 26.
It is. You're throwing a lot of your eggs in this season in the basket. You know, and at this point in recording, we don't have the defensive coordinator named yet. So I think that's sort of an overarching theme here. But all these guys coming back, particularly Aller and the running backs, in my opinion, on the offensive side, really suggests that I don't say it's championship or bust for Penn State, but it kind of is from a narrative standpoint, you know, in terms of, you know, Franklin, the financial resources committed behind this. You know, if you can't get it done this year, you're going to have a dramatic drop off, I think, in talent. And that drop off could become even more drastic if some of these guys that you were sort of counting on to sort of stick around here decide to exit because they don't want to sit on the bench this year. So that is one of my concerns. You know, if it doesn't work out this year, what does that mean moving forward? And like, I don't know. I mean, you tell me, maybe you don't know either. I'll put you on the spot as to what Franklin's buyout is, you know, in terms of coming down at some point. But if the season is a disappointment, and we talked about key to happiness is low expectations, what does that mean in terms of conversations about Penn State's future with Franklin?
Well, I don't think you never want to say always, never, those kind of words. But with Franklin, I would think it would take a lot for them to even consider the buyout or moving on. And I think for him, I'm not sure he hasn't reached that age where is he prepared to go elsewhere to try to restart a program, get it where he wants, especially with this program now that seems to be on the upswing. I know it's debatable whether he's won that big game yet, you know, getting playoff wins against SMU and Boise State, then losing to Notre Dame. But I think the stadium refurbishing, the talk about he will often say he's in line with the university president, the athletic director. What that means is he's getting the resources he needs. They're getting the money coming in. Obviously, for Aller and Singleton and Allen coming back, along with many others, they're paying these guys, okay? That is the reality, and it feels like that's becoming – NIL is becoming less of a dirty word in the Penn State community. So they're looking – Penn State fans, they like winning. They like going to the playoffs. They like winning playoff games. And I think that's part of it, Steve. They seem I saw a recent where they estimated the NIL numbers. Penn State came in at number 11. And I think that based on some of these players coming back for this coming year, they're probably in the top 10 now with NIL money.
Yeah, I think it's great that and needed to get the financial resources where you want to be if you're going to compete against the top programs. And I give Franklin some credit that. And now that there's more alignment, as you said, at some point, you know, people are going to start to question the return on investment. And if the investment is there now, does that make the head coach position a more desirable destination for some others? I don't know. I'm just raising the prospect as to you have a lot of expectations this year, people spending a lot of money. People don't usually give a lot of money, not expect something in return. I say that as somebody who lives in DC. So I'm just raising the question as to if it doesn't happen this year, when is it going to happen?
If you look at the money investment, as I said, Penn State, one of the estimates I saw, they were number 11. So who were the teams, you know, above? So Texas, by the way, was number one, not Ohio State. Ohio State was number two. Do you look at the Texas coach the same way? They invested much more money than Penn State did, and they came up short. They made it to the Final Four and lost, which is exactly where Penn State is coming into this season. So do you think Steve Sarkisian has the same pressure on him as James Franklin?
I don't, in the sense, one, I don't believe Sarkisian's been there 11 years. So I think there's a bit of a fatigue factor. 11 years is a really relatively long leash to give a coach and not have much to show for it. And then I also think with Sarkisian, you know, you played Ohio State, fairly admirable. I think there's some questions from the quarterback position there, decision to go with Ewers and not Manning. I'm just talking to a lot of Texas people there. I think the offense didn't really reach it the potential that some had hoped. I guess where I'm going with Franklin is, you know, we talked about the Notre Dame game as sort of being one of the highlights of his career, is not doing anything to blow the game in terms of, you know, really making some questionable decisions in game. But again, what he didn't do was do anything to win the game in terms of coaching adjustments and decisions. And again, it was another example of a double digit lead that was squandered. And he's a long history of that now through 11 years. So I guess that's why I would differentiate the two, from my opinion.
I think with the coaching, and I believe you and I, you know, have a little bit different takes on it. With Franklin, I would give him a longer leash, I think, than you would. And part of it is this idea of, you know, who's the next coach then? Would the grass be any greener? And the other aspect to that is, and this will come off sounding like a very dumb statement, but I'll take that risk. It's not like I haven't said dumb things before on the air, Steve. But there's a lot of coaches who have never won it until they won it. What I mean by that is Michigan was ready to run Jim Harbaugh out of town, their fans, and then he won the national championship. Literally a month ago, Ohio State fans were ready to run Ryan Day out of town. Within the matter of weeks, he turned the entire narrative around. And if you go, you could go back, you know, Dabo Sweeney for many years. You know, I mean, literally people were calling it dabbling this season because you would to lose a game that you really shouldn't lose. And that happened until he started winning championships. So I do think Franklin will face that until he actually does win. But I think there are, you know, a lot of instances where coaches have gotten close before they get over the top.
Rebuttal for all three of those compared to Franklin. Harbaugh, whatever you think of him, had a schematic advantage compared to Franklin in terms of making in-game adjustments. He also chose to go in a different direction strategically in terms of the style of player he was going to recruit and style of play. So I think that's the difference between him and Franklin. With Ryan Day, Ohio State is always going to have a talent advantage over Penn State. So I think that's sort of what makes him different than Franklin. And then with Dabo, he had generational quarterbacks, mobile dual threat quarterbacks. Franklin hasn't done anything with the quarterback position. So if I had to say where I would draw a distinction between those three and Franklin, I think that that would be an example.
Well, I think your rebuttal on with Jim Harbaugh could carry weight. The rebuttal that the reason why James Franklin hasn't won like Ryan Day is because Ryan Day has much more talent. And the reason why he hasn't won like Clemson is Clemson has had generational talent at quarterback. I think talks more to they're just in better – Ryan Day and Dabo Swinney were in better positions to win. So anyway, I think – James Frank, I suspect you and I are not done talking about James Franklin. And, of course, during the offseason, we're going to have plenty of opportunities. Meanwhile, Steve, meanwhile, we are halfway through our show, which we're going to hit all the positions. And we got to two of them so far. At this rate, we'll be done in about a month. I promise, though, when we get to the third quarter, we'll get back to it. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m., and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galati. It is quarter number three of our show. And you know what, Steve? Just because I promised it early in the show, we were going to go through the position by position analysis. We're finally going to get there. We did get to quarterback and running back. So we're going to move on from there. And one of the most intriguing positions, and I'm glad that you've already brought it up a few times, is this offensive line, okay? I think it's going to be great, so I'm already giving you my opinion. Let's talk about the most likely scenario. Starters from going from left to right, starting with left tackle. Apparently, Drew Shelton will be back for that. Left guard, Vega Ioane. Center, we've had the announcement. Nick Dawkins is coming back, the veteran in the middle. At right guard, Sal Warmly has moved on. But you get to replace him with Cooper Cousins. By all reports, he's doing fantastic. And at right tackle, the interesting thing is we had Anthony Donka, who many might argue that he was the best offensive lineman. He gets hurt late in the year. What happens? Nolan Rucci comes in and may have been the best offensive lineman from when he took over. And I'll add one more additional guy, J.B. Nelson, making the announcement that he's coming back. He's the guy who could fill in at guard, fill in at tackle. He's also a guy that they brought in to play left guard to allow Vega Ioane to do the thing he does when he split out and goes in motion and just crushes somebody. So after giving you that preview, go ahead, tell me your thoughts on this offensive line.
I've already been alluding to it. I'm really excited. I just hope they all come back. I hope they all stay healthy. I think that's the big thing, the fact that you already have a lot of proven performance on the field and a lot of depth there. I really don't think you have to say much more than that. I mean, just the fact that they were dominant, got more dominant on the run game, which something had been a real liability for most of Franklin's tenure, let's just be honest. So for them to go from sort of the laughing stock to now the strength of the team, in my opinion, it's a testament to Troutwine and his vision there and realizing it. And Aller has a lot of time to throw. You know, we talk about it doesn't always throw it to the right team or where it needs to go, but, you know, I give them credit there too.
Well, and he is obviously, Drew Aller, I'm talking about, so much better when he's given time to throw. And I like, you brought up the idea of, you know, weathering injury. The nice thing I think also with this team is, with the offensive line, is the depth now. That you have a guy like J.B. Nelson who has enough experience that if you have an issue, he could step right in. And I think what's really good is at tackle, you know, you have Drew Shelton and you have Donka and you have Nolan Rucci. I think there are teams that struggle to have one decent tackle. Having three of them is a luxury.
Well, yeah, you saw how it really set Ohio State back in sort of the latter half of the regular season last year. So I agree. Hopefully these guys all stay after spring ball.
Yes, and I'm thinking I shouldn't put it this way. Why would they go? Well, you get a enough offer. that is part of it. But if they're in place, and you hit it also, the way they played through the playoffs and the way the running backs – and maybe a big part of it was just having both of them as healthy as they were all season at the end. It was tremendous and a reason to be excited going into the 2025 season. All right, let's hit another position. Let's go to tight end, where you lose a guy like Tyler Warren, you're going to take a step back. There's just no way around it. However, you have a guy like Khalil Dinkins, apparently coming back. He did a lot of the dirty work for, you know, the last couple of years. Now a chance for him to shine a bit. We got to see the true freshman Luke Reynolds do some things that have been pretty good.
Warren-esque.
Okay, let's go with that. I think everybody's excited about him. And what I think is interesting is a guy who had a lot of promise, who a year ago, a lot of folks were talking about the way they're talking about Luke Reynolds now, is Andrew Rapoulier, who's coming back. So you may have lost Tyler Warren, but Steve, may not be too bad there at tight end.
No, I think that's another position you feel really good about the depth, hoping, again, that everybody stays healthy and on the roster after the spring. I'm curious to see what Kotelnicki's going to do. Maybe you see more two tight end sets just because you have so much to work with there. And I think there's some complementary skills there. I mean, you mentioned Dinkins doing more of the quote-unquote dirty work. You know, is his role going to evolve? Same thing with Reynolds at times, you know, forming some very Tyler Warren-esque plays. So I think, you know, there's a lot of upside there. So another area I feel really, really good about heading back at coming back into the season. But that's sort of now you're almost taking that for advantage, just given the long lineage here of tight ends, particularly under Franklin.
Well, that's it. That might be the position that I am overall happiest with, because there's precedent, there's present, there's future. I mean, it seems like they're all covered. And I've spoken to people who are really excited about this. Olish, who was just recruited this past year, Pennsylvania kid who was originally committed to Michigan and now is coming to Penn State. So the depth, everything just looks great there at tight end. Kudos out to Ty Howell for the job he's done there. Mm-hmm. All right, Steve, we were at tight end. We have to get to wide receiver, and it's almost a complete turnover with the wide receiver position. The guys who were at the top of the pecking order, Trey Wallace, Omari Evans, Julian Fleming has already run out of eligibility. The other two I mentioned are transferring. Wallace to Ole Miss, Omari Evans to Washington. There are some backup guys who have also moved on. But in the meantime, two guys from the portal, Kyren Hudson from USC and Devontae Ross from Troy. Very different types of receivers. Ross, that smaller, quicker kind of guy. Hudson, a bigger, probably more capable of going up in battle one-on-one, getting those 50-50 balls. And who's Liam Clifford, I guess, is the guy with the most experience returning. I almost hate to ask, Steve, but what do we think about that wide receiver room?
Well, you could argue there's nowhere to go but up, given how bad it was last year. So maybe that's the optimistic take on this. I mean, look, Liam Clifford coming back for Miami Julian Fleming, the nicest thing you could say about those guys was their run-blocking ability. That's not usually what you're looking for in terms of compliments outside of your wide receiver room. Higgins, was his first year last year as a wide receiver coach? Is that right?
First or second.
I guess. Where I'm going is, he didn't recruit Evans, he didn't recruit Wallace, I don't think. So, yeah, I think there's more pressure on him now. Bring some of your guys in, whether it's through the portal or some of these guys that he recruited last season, and see if he can develop them. But that's clearly going to be another weakness on this team. I think Penn State should be an attractive destination, all things even on the money front and the portal, because of the running backs, not necessarily Aller, just because of that running game. That is going to take a lot of pressure off, provide some single coverage, I think, for wide receivers. And, if you have some halfway decent physical ability, you would like to think that you could really put up some nice numbers and plays to impress some NFL scouts there. So I'm hoping these guys are coming in. It's hard for me to think that they're going to be worse than last year. And I think it was Andy that had a stat. There's like less than 40% of their completions went to the receivers. I mean, that's atrocious. So,
yeah. It is, but again, part of that, playing devil's advocate a bit, is you had an all-world tight end. You also had running backs who could catch the ball. I did want to ask you your reaction to Wallace and Evans leaving. Was it good? Anyone associated with this room needs to be gone? Or were you looking at it and saying, I wish – at least one of them was coming back?
I mean, my gut sort of tells me it's hard to argue losing your two top receivers is a good thing. I guess the other way to look at it is it wasn't working for everybody. Those guys have been in the program for a while. They weren't probably getting the level of production they want. I'm sure they were frustrated by that. Again, whether that was poor coaching, Aller just overly cautious, checking down, not being able to deliver the ball. I don't know. So I understand they're sort of wanting to leave and get a fresh start, particularly after just the amount of criticism leveled at the room. And look, from Penn State's perspective, there wasn't the production. So, I think it's one of these situations that maybe, both sides were sort of in their interest to move on. I guess it's sort of a cop-out answer, but that's sort of how I see it.
Yeah, it is a cop-out answer. Come on, Steve. We need better from you.
What do you expect from a guy from D.C.?
I don't expect you to play both sides of the political aisle. That's what I don't expect. But what I would be curious about is you got this feeling, and we're going to talk about the defensive coordinator, but you got the feeling that Franklin was not heartbroken by Tom Allen moving on. And is there anything specific that he said? No, but you just didn't get the feeling that Penn State really fought to bring him back. Go ahead.
Well, you mentioned D.C., and there's always that famous follow the money with respect to Watergate. I bring that up is because Penn State reportedly offering a lot of money to bring another defensive coordinator there. So the departure wasn't over money. I think Allen's performance as defensive coordinator was probably average at best, given the amount of talent that you had there. I think he was a jag, just a guy. Honestly, I would put Brent Pry in that category too. The guy that was special, I know you're a Manny Diaz fanboy, but I would actually join you in that fandom, is I think he was a special coordinator. And whether Penn State can sort of get somebody who can go beyond just realizing the talent that's there, getting more out of it, that potential, I think that's probably the goal for next season, given that all the chips seem to be pushed there and trying to make it a special year. So the fact that they're willing to offer guys like Jim Knowles over $3 million to me suggests that Franklin was sort of not necessarily enthralled with the output he got from Allen. And honestly, we talked about this before. His late in-game adjustments left a lot to be desired. I mean, I still go back to the Bowling Green game. I started having reservations about that guy, and unfortunately, we saw that persist. And I think it paid part of the reason that they lost against Notre Dame, outside of Aller's errant throws.
Well, I use that. I brought that up because I'm wondering about the same thing with Trey Wallace and Omari Evans. And now players are free agents also. And, you know, was the effort made to keep them to stay? I don't think a year ago the effort was made to keep Lambert Smith. What I wonder is, was an effort made here? I'll let you answer that question when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four of our show. He's Steve, I'm Jim. We're wrapping up quarter number three, and the offense, with talking about the wide receivers who left, Omari Evans, Trey Wallace. And, you know, I use the Tom Allen, the defensive coordinator who moved on, as an example. I didn't get the feeling that James Franklin tried hard to keep him. And I'm wondering if that's the same case with Trey Wallace and Omari Evans. There wasn't a great effort to keep them from moving on.
Well, in this era of NIL, you're talking about return on investment. Like, I'm not the type of financial situation where Penn State football is asking me to make a lot of big donations. But if I was, I'd sit there and go, why would I give these guys any money? For what? And, you know, I don't know, that factors in. I'm sure Franklin's probably looking at the production level too. But if you want to relate to return on investment, I didn't see any return.
Well, I think there, in a lot of these situations, there's the, hey, coach, I'm not sure if I'm still loved here. I, you know, have other opportunities. And the answer is, oh, congratulations. That sounds great. I hope you enjoy your time in the Southeast Conference versus, you know, a Nick Singleton, a Drew Aller, where it's like, hey, what can we do to keep you here? So let's move to the defensive side of the ball. We talked a little bit about Tom Allen. Let's talk about the actual players coming back. On the defensive line, kind of analogous to Tyler Warren leaving, you had Abdul Carter moving on. Of course, he's going to be one of the very top picks. And by the end of the year, I thought he may have been the best defensive player in the country. But what you did have coming back, Denai Dennis Sutton and Zane Durant, I think were huge coming back. So how do they fill out the starting cast? Defensive end, is it Smith Vilbert? You got Zariah Fisher. You got the young player, Max Granville. And then at tackle, it's great that Zane Durant's coming back, but you have a couple folks moving on. Alonzo Ford did some good things. I think he's coming off the injury. That's what you have at the tackle position. What do you think of the defensive line?
I think they brought in a defensive tackle from Michigan too, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, my guess is he wasn't leaving Michigan because he was starting, but, you know, there could be some reliable depth there. Like, you got to be excited about the defensive line coming back. You know, I think Denai Dennis Sutton, I'd be surprised if he's not a consensus All-American. I'm sort of excited to see what he's going to be in terms of coming in from the blind side, the way that Carter was. Losing a guy like Carter was special. I mean, that guy really made tremendous strides from where it was the beginning of the year, where I pointed out, look, he looked like a guy that never played the position before, to where he ended up at the end of the year. I mean, I'll give him a lot of credit for that. I wish him well. But defensive line should be a strength, provided, again, they stay healthy and that they return.
You know, staying healthy is always going to be part of the issue. But I'm with you, though, on Abdul Carter. It was great to see. And it's funny, prior to the season, we all said, well, let him get settled in. Let him play a few games there. And then after a game or two, if he struggled, we're quick to rip him, or a lot of folks are. But by the end of the season, he was special. All right, let's take a look at the linebackers. they lost Kalen King, who was that guy in the middle I thought was the most sure tackler on the team.
It wasn't Colby King?
Oh, Colby King. I'm sorry. I knew.
No, that's all right.
I've been pretty good about those two and not messing up the names. But I had Kalen King on my mind because he left
too early, just like his brother. Yeah, you thought he would have learned the same mistake.
Yeah, you know, but Colby King has decided to move on. Returning, you have Dom DeLuca, you have Tony Rojas, and it feels like they're going to have to replace Colby King in the middle, and it's like, where are they going to go for that? Is it Tamir Robinson, who we've heard some good things about, is someone among the younger group prepared to step up and be part of that linebacker room?
I've heard good things about Anthony Smeka. I thought maybe he could transfer into that middle spot and maybe fill that role. I mean, I was just alluded with my comment with King. I was surprised he left, but I also sort of understand, too. He's been there for 4 years. His film is what it is. I'm not sure that he was really going to improve his draft stock. You know, with Rojas, I think obviously he was a player that I followed here in the D.C. area. There's a lot of potential. I think the thing that's really holding him back, in my opinion, is tackling. Like, see that corrected there. With DeLuca, you know, he's a little undersized, and I think his tackling could improve a little bit too. To me, he's sort of more of like almost a hybrid safety role, so I think he's sort of more of a matchup person, which is why maybe you slide somebody else in there for some of these games where you're facing more of a running attack. But yeah, I think general, it's improving the tackling, not running yourself out of position. But you're going to have two experienced guys there with DeLuca and Rojas. And like I said, I think somebody can fill that role there in the middle. And with Dan Connor, you know, sort of more or less, I think he's listed as an analyst, but I think more or less he's the middle linebacker coach. He was somebody I enjoyed watching play. And my guess is if he can translate his knowledge to the successor here for King, I feel pretty good about that position.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Smeka. I've heard some, you know, very positive things also. And is it between him and Tamir Robinson? You have at least two what appear to be pretty good candidates, you know, to take over the position. So let's move to the defensive backs. Let's start with the safeties, which the safety play has been so good in the last couple of years. Couple guys moving on, but you have Zaki Wheatley returning, which is absolutely huge. And how about King Mack making his return, his trek from Penn State to Alabama, back to Penn State? And he could step right into a starter's role.
Would that be Jalen Reed's role that he'd be fulfilling there?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, like the fact that he already has familiarity with the program, the grass is always greener, particularly down there in Alabama. So happy to see him return, some familiarity with him and the program. So I think that's an encouraging sign at the safety. The safety position under Franklin has been pretty good.
Yeah. And by the way, just to interrupt, I made the mistake of not mentioning Zion Tracy as part of all right. this also.
I think, you know, having him the nice thing that I think they do on a defensive standpoint is they rotate a lot of guys in there in the secondary, and they rotate a lot of guys in there on the defensive front. So even though somebody may not have necessarily been listed as a starter, they got some significant reps. It's not going to be completely foreign to them if they get some more playing time this year. So I think the safety position, I feel a little better about. Where I don't feel that great about when a transition to the corners. You know, I'm not sure that the guys leaving were that big loss. But I guess my point is, you know, if the guys were better than them on the bench, you know, why were they on the bench? So maybe that's another area to address under the portals. But again, that was an area going back to Tom Allen defense and the passing game really struggling at times. I'd like to see improve next year.
Well, I think the thing of it is you brought up the good point about them playing a lot of people, and that I've made reference, especially the 23 season in talking about the defense, which was under Manny Diaz. As I said, essentially, I feel like there's 20 starters on defense. Okay. So you could lose several players and still have guys that, you know, I'm calling quote unquote starters because of the way they rotate. And, you know, the example, again, I just went, you know, brain gap there, not mentioning Zion Tracy, along with Zaki Wheatley and King Mack. And you had, you know, Dwan Lane also getting, you know, a lot of playing time. So now when we go to the cornerbacks, and yes, they, you know, they lost some people, Jalen Kimber to the NFL, Cam Miller transferring out, but you still had enough guys playing that you do have A.J. Harris returning. You have Elliot Washington returning. Adavian Collins, I think, did some good things last year. So even though you lost a few people, I understand some concerns there, but there is still, I'd hardly say they're depleted.
I wouldn't say depleted. It's not as bad as the wide receiver room, but in terms of a position that you need to address on defense, I mean, to me, that's the most glaring one out there in terms of needs to make improvements, in my opinion, just based on what you have coming back and what you don't.
Well, and sometimes, and this goes back into the coordinator position, and it made me wonder sometimes some of the issues with the DBs or the coverage, or you saw the passing game from other teams succeeding. I wonder, is it the talent on the field or is it the coordinator?
Yeah, and there's probably a good case to be made for that. I mean, with Diaz, you could point to specific plays, not to mention just schemes, where you could say, okay, that guy did something special, and as a result, Penn State won the game or was in a position to win the game. Sometimes going back to their offensive struggles, they couldn't follow through there that season. But I can't remember a single time where I was like, oh, thank God they had Tom Allen, that, you know, because he did this or that they won the game. I guess, you know, Ohio State, they held them to relatively few points, relative being the key term with Ohio State. Again, you had that offensive flop there on Kotelnicki's side. But overall, I just sort of am at a loss for anything. Like, what did Allen do specifically that you can credit him as, okay, that was something unique to him that really helped Penn State? I can't think of any. And so to that point, maybe that's the way that the corner position improves next year, is you just have somebody more competent there as the coordinator.
Well, that's the part. You put it really well. And, you know, I actually have several listeners who will tease me about my Manny Diaz man crush, but my feeling was he earned it. And I could watch plays, watch some things he do, and I go, ha, Manny Diaz's fingerprints are all over that play. And I didn't feel the same way about Tom Allen. And that kind of leads me to the question, okay, now as we record this, now maybe when the listeners hear it, it'll be different. There is no defensive coordinator yet hired at Penn State. Are you a Jim Knowles guy, the guy from Ohio State?
I mean, the guy has a proven track record. A lot of teams want him right now. I think Oklahoma's in the running as well as Ohio State. Somebody said Notre Dame. I don't know that they're going to have the resources. I don't know that that's Kinley is attractive a job for him, given their exodus of players there as well. So I think if you're putting all your eggs in this basket, you try to get the best guy out there. If money's your barometer of that, Knowles is probably at the top of the list. I guess I worry if it's not, then who is it? But if you're willing to back a truck up at $3 million, you're probably going to get more people to raise their hands to volunteer for the role. Again, I just go back to, it depends on compared to what. You like to mention that with Franklin. I think you can get a lot more, particularly if you throw that lot of money, than what you got out of a guy like Tom Allen last year. So I think that's the encouraging thing.
And I think the other part to it is, you brought up the point, if you're willing to invest that kind of money, even if it's not Jim Knowles, I think you've established that, you know what, we're all in. And if it's not Jim Knowles, it'll be somebody else pretty highly regarded.
I think it's the money. I think it's the talented roster. So the idea that I'm going to come here and I'm going to get paid well, but I'm actually going to produce, which is good to your long-term interest. And look, I mean, you can have different opinions on what it's like to work for Franklin. My sense is generally Franklin usually delegates that to the defense position of the coach. So
I think so too. All right, that's the last word. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.